court refused to take the case. And so now we come back to the two hard drives locked in the courthouse. Our guest is Professor Eric Goldman, co-director of the High Tech Law Institute at the Santa Clara University School of Law. Thanks so much for being with us again, Eric.
Yeah, my pleasure. Thanks for including me.
So, San Francisco federal judge Charles Breyer has ruled that the 22 plaintiffs will get access to those drives to see if they can find evidence of their own personal data there. If they find their communications on those drives, is it basically game over for Google?
Not necessarily. There's a variety of other questions that still need to be answered in this case. But the plaintiffs will have overcome the hardest part, which is connecting Google's activity with their transmissions. That's been always one of the biggest questions in the case. How does any one plaintiff know that they got sniffed?
Well, that is an interesting question, actually. And I wanted to ask you how these plaintiffs were chosen or how the lawyers chose them to be purported representatives of a class, but people who Street View might have captured their information.
Yeah, so this is one of the classic dilemmas of plaintiffs' class action litigation. Often the lawyers pick the named plaintiffs rather than the named plaintiffs picking the lawyers. So it's a little bit of a weird system. You would think that someone who was harmed goes out and then they try to access the courthouse and need help doing it. Whereas in a case like this, the more likely scenario is that the lawyer said, I think I can go and win a case. Let me go find who can represent that case. But even then, the lawyers had to find people who they could represent to the court they believed had gotten sniffed. And even if the named plaintiffs had the streetcars drive by their house, there's no guarantee that they actually had any data sniffed during that process. So there's always been a little bit of a fiction here that the named plaintiffs are actually legitimately representing the class because we don't even know that they're the ones that got sniffed.
Sniffed. Is that the word that they use in all these in these cases?
I'm using it.
Okay,
that way,
so then we'll use it as well. So Eric, these drives contain at least 200 gigabytes of data, according to the plaintiffs' lawyers, and you have these 22 plaintiffs who are going to be through experts looking at these. Suppose they don't find anything.
That's a possibility. One possibility is that the case will die right after that when everyone realizes that what got sniffed was not problematic in a legally recognizable way, or that we can't connect any particular person to the data that's on that hard drive. At minimum, it's possible, and I would vote probable, that some of the named plaintiffs are going to no longer be named plaintiffs because they may not be able to establish any legal violation.
Well, speaking of legal violations and what it is, one of the things that's confusing about this case is what exactly is Google said to have done wrong? I mean, instinctively, one might think, well, gee, they shouldn't be collecting private data. But at the same time, if you've got, you know, your wireless device on as you go down the street, you have people's networks popping up on it all the time. So what's the difference between that scenario and what Google did here with Street View?
Yeah, that's a great question, and I think it's one of the reasons why this case is so confusing. You hear these allegations that this is one of the most massive interceptions of personal communications ever. There's both some legitimate and illegitimate conduct that got bundled together in Google's behavior. Google went around and it tried to identify where there were wireless signals. Identifying the existence of the wireless signals, I think, is legitimate under the law. My perspective, I'm not sure that's been the legal conclusion. But then, in addition to identifying that these signals were available, the same thing that you or I could do if we walked up and down that street with a device looking for Wi-Fi signals, Google captured some of the data flows that were going between that Wi-Fi signal and their destination.
We're talking with Professor Eric Goldman of Santa Clara University School of Law about the Google lawsuit over the Wi-Fi Roundup, so-called Roundup. Bloomberg Law is brought to you by GE Capital. GE Capital provides more than money. They can also bring expertise from across all of GE. If you just need a loan, just call a bank at GE Capital. They're builders. What they know can help you grow. Eric, was there not at one point an allegation that it was a rogue engineer who used the wireless analyzer, and Google tried to push the blame on the rogue?
Yeah, right. So that's the illegitimate part. The idea is that the understanding from upper management and Google was that they would capture the Wi-Fi signals, but not any of the payload data, the actual communications moving over it. And the allegation has been that a rogue engineer nevertheless decided to incorporate a tool into the Wi-Fi capture device that would also capture the substance communications. And that was, in my opinion, at minimum a mistake. Google should not have done it. Whether that's illegal is now what's being tested in court.
So, well, let's say that somebody at Google, be it a rogue or otherwise, had meant to do this. What would be the purpose for Google, you know, while it's capturing Street View information, what would be the purpose of capturing this additional information that it's alleged that they got?
Yeah, my apologies. That's never been clear to me. Google may have explained that in the court papers, but I don't recall understanding the answer to that question myself.
Eric, if you're a victim under the Wiretap Act, you don't have to prove that you were harmed or that Google or that the other side benefited. So Google's never had to answer that question, maybe.
Yeah, and I apologize. There's a lot of paper in this case I have not had a chance to review. But let me come back to that. Normally, we would ask that question at the threshold, as a threshold inquiry. Did the victim suffer any harm here? We don't let anyone who's unhappy about the state of the world get access to the courthouse. They have to show legally recognizable harm. And this has been an ongoing battle in privacy lawsuits across the country. In this particular case, under the particular statute that's being litigated, merely alleging a violation of the statute is considered to be its own legally recognizable harm. So that's correct, that they wouldn't have to show harm in order to have access to the courthouse. And there's the availability of statutory damages in this case, which means that they don't even have to prove that there was actual damages. The statute says there's a check available for you if you can establish your harm.
What is so interesting to me about this case is it seems as if you could have 22 plaintiffs and they could be searching, I don't know how long, with the experts, and they might find nothing on those drives. And yet Google has fought this case tooth and nail, so Google must think that there's some kind of problem. Or not. I don't know. What, I mean, they fought it to the Supreme Court.
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure what I would have recommended if I were in Google's shoes. If this was one of the cases, I would have said, let's just figure out a number and let's just settle this case and not go through all the heartache of it. The Street View incident has been a thorn in Google's side for years now, and it's interfered with their relations with foreign countries. It's interfered with their relations with domestic regulators, and it's interfered with their lawsuit here. So I'm not sure why Google has decided to fight this bitterly as opposed to simply say, we screwed up and we need to do something else.
It's been many years in the making, and there is so much to talk about in this case, especially the way they're going to handle this discovery of these two disks that are locked in the courthouse. I'm June Grosso with Michael Best, and you're listening to Bloomberg Law on Bloomberg Radio.